Good afternoon. Welcome to the February 14th meeting of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We have a very full agenda today, mostly work sessions, but some public hearings. We're going to start out with opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1543. Excuse me, 1591. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1591 modifies the membership and powers of the Tribal Information Council, makes changes to the policy of the Oregon Motorist Information Act of 1971, kills provisions that sunset the authority of the Tribal Information Council over rest areas, increases the number of rest areas over which the Tribal Information Council has managerial authority, provides an increase in funds with monies attributable to certain increases in fees and tax rates. The measure has an emergency clause that would take effect upon passage. The measure also has a Ways and Means referral, Mr. Chair, so this bill would go to Ways and Means if the committee takes action. We have the Dash 6 Amendment, which replaced the original measure, which I believe Mr. Campbell is here to speak to, but we also have some other folks to speak on the bill first, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Senator Courtney. President, it's our honor. Whenever you're ready, sir.
He's coming out of the committee next door.
Am I supposed to speak now?
We're waiting.
So. My name is Peter Courtney.
Almost missed the show.
And I live at 2925 Island View Drive, northeast in Salem, 97. Actually, you were here, 303. Where have you been? Yeah, I don't want to hear what you were doing. You should have been here. And I also represent Senate District 11, which is parts of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn. In fact, I don't know if it's in effect yet, but if it is, I represent right here. I represent right here. I represent you right now, right now, right now at this place. And when Senator Chuck Thompson came to me, and asked me for help. I'm saying that for pointed reasons, which, you know, I said I like what he wanted to do. It was involved a little rest area up there where they ski. Government camp? Yeah. And he was enlightened enough to, opposed to just speaking to that rest area, which I've never been in. Never been in there. I've been in other rest areas. I don't want you to think I don't. I just don't. I do weird things, but I've never been in that rest area. And looked at a number of rest areas, and I said I would because I got involved with rest areas back in 2009. And I believe that, and you've got my testimony. I don't like to read testimony about the beauty of Oregon and how I feel about. You need to always show well in life. It's a phrase. And how clean you are is part of that. Roads, mountains, streams, water, and rest areas. So I've always been fixated, and you can do what you want with that psychologically, what that means, on how clean a public restroom is. I don't care where it is. I like the restrooms to be clean. We won't get into the restrooms in my house and how meticulous I can be, but I want them clean, and I want Oregon restrooms clean. That's part of being an Oregonian. I want my restrooms clean. I want them clean for me. I want them clean for you. I want them clean for other Oregonians or people who are visiting us. That's just how I feel. So I got in this pitch battle back on this transportation committee, and a certain individual I'm looking at was on that committee with me, and that was a near-death experience being on that committee. And I stumbled into looking at the possibility that we could spend more money and invest more money in keeping our rest areas clean. Little did I know that was not a smart idea in terms of certain interests, i.e. the Department of Transportation, i.e. Parks and Recreation. Neither one of them wanted anything to do with restrooms, Even if they were told to have something to do with them, they didn't want to. That is, they had other priorities in their life. And so, the Oregon travel, what's the last word they use?
Council.
Excuse what?
Experience.
Experience. You said council, he said experience. Which one is it?
Experience.
Experience.
That's right, I'm wrong.
Enter that picture, and they said this is something they really, really, really wanted to do. They wanted to do this. Senator Bustar was on that, was that group, so he knows what I'm talking about. He can either verify or not. If he verifies, he may say he still thinks I was wrong then, but he knows what I'm talking about because he was there with this.
Yes, sir.
So we decided in that famous Jobs and Transportation Act of 2009 legislature, House Bill 2001, that we'd allocate $3 million to the Oregon Travel Experience, manage seven areas. Later, OTE agreed to add an additional two rest areas to that list. Oregon Travel Experience currently operates nine rest areas in five locations. Now, let me explain how you can do that, because I could not understand that. That means there's a rest area on either side of the road. Do you understand? That's one location. Do you get that? Because I couldn't figure out how you can have nine in five locations. But if you're confused, let me explain that to you. You now, I've explained it. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. ODOT operates 32 rest areas in 23 locations. Oregon Parks and Recreation Department operates 34 rest areas in 33 locations. Now, you understand, Oregon Parks, they don't like their rest areas, and ODOT doesn't like theirs. They don't want to do it. OTE wants to do it. You get where I'm going? I just want somebody who wants the job. So, also, the Cow Creek Band of the Umpqua Tribe operates one rest area in one area, and the City of Oak Ridge, that's interesting, operates one rest area. Who operates this government camp? Well, who did that?
ODOT.
The government. And that's no longer a problem. They have apparently decided for $800,000 they'll do what they're supposed to do up there. Never been up there. I know what it looks like, and I'm not going in that thing. I am not going in there. That's just the way it is. I just have this feeling about that place. But I'm not going in there. But this bill that the good senator introduced doesn't speak to just one area, his backyard. It speaks to Oregon, my Oregon. And seriously. And I was just delighted that somebody else cared as much about rest areas as I did, because I didn't think anybody does, and I was starting to feel lonely and a bit peculiar from a psychiatric standpoint. What this bill will do is transfer 19 rest areas currently operated by ODOT in nine locations to OTE. Following this transfer, OTE will manage 28 rest areas in 14 locations. Rest areas need to be clean and safe. You know all about that. So I'm not going to... the rest of this is the kind of thing you say to show how much you care and love Oregon. And I don't like to read things, so either you're going to accept it or not. But that's what this bill does. If I had my way, they'd all be taken over by OTE. I'm just going to tell you that, because I'm very impressed by what they did just north of here. Not only is it clean, but there's a safety issue and some other things. I mean, they take pride in this stuff, folks. I'm not being melodramatic. They do. I like that attitude. It's called a good attitude. Unfortunately, we should put some money there, and ODOT says, we don't want to do this, but you're not taking our money. I'm not going to get involved in that here with you. Mr. Chair, you're just so nice, and I mean that. I didn't think you'd hear this bill. I didn't think you'd hear it. And you may regret hearing it after we get through here today. If you don't want to move, you know, I'm very serious. You're going to have to speak. I mean, don't worry. You'll be all right, but just go with me. All right. I'm going to be up front with you. If you don't want to move the bill, fine. I've had a bad day. I'm okay with that. This is not a power play. You don't want to move the bill. You don't like the bill. Then don't do it. This is not a power play. I am grateful. I'm serious. Senator Starr should know this because he saw me talk to this issue. He'll decide whether or not I'm speaking in good faith. I believe in this. I think it's the way to go, if not today, tomorrow. But I will respect the individual and collective wisdom of this committee to do whatever you want to do. And that's sincere. I'm very, very sincere. Now, with that, may I ask, before you start coming after me, the good Senator Chuck Thompson, who rushed over here, left another committee, left his personal life to be here, would you allow him to speak, please, since this is his bill that he asked me to sign on to?
Certainly, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Corey. My name is Chuck Thompson. Very short. It'll be much shorter, believe me. District 26, which covers, I live in Hood River County, covers a lot of Clackamas and Multnomah County, and it covers the whole mountain area where the rest area is. And Senator Courtney, I didn't know about the 2009 your role in that. I wasn't even aware of that issue. I came to you to help sponsor the bill because I figured if anybody in the Senate, you would probably have the weakest bladder and enjoy or need for restrooms. Anybody in the Senate? That's why I came to you, sir. Let me get to the point really quick. I heard about this in August or somewhere in there, and it came to us through the Oregonian. I had no knowledge of this. How come everybody's laughing?
Came to Senator, there's an old saying really around here, you've got a yes and you're working towards a no. I got seven bills to do today.
To get this bill started from the ground up, we had a problem. We had a public forum up at the mountain, a lot of support. We were hearing from people in Bend, and the only reason I said that, we had two great gentlemen from West Lynn come up to the hearing up in Bend and say how they because of their bladder size at that time couldn't make it around the mountain without stopping the government camp rest area. And a lot of other people weighed in on that. And so we brought it to the legislature. OTE came up with an idea, worked with ODOT, worked with Clackamas County. Clackamas County gave a lot of their time and money to get us through to the middle of March. We do have an agreement through the governor and to keep it open, but I too, like Senator Courtney, think most of our rest areas need a lot of work and attention, not just general maintenance. We've already heard, I'm already getting emails from people up at the mountain to please keep OTE running the rest area because it's so much nicer. So thanks for your time and effort on this bill, and thanks for letting me speak today. Thanks.
Thank you, Senators. Any questions? Thank you very much. We'll let you get back to work.
Are we still speaking?
They might have to leave.
We still
speak. Yeah, there's a restroom down here. Mr. Campbell and Mr. Garrett.
The last time that the President signed on a bill with Thompson.
Quick. Short.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Travel Experience, and I was kind of hoping that the Senator would actually ask you all to vote yes on the bill in front of you, but since that hasn't happened, it's up to me to make sure that's the end result. I'll be brief in my remarks. I do have an opening statement I want to make, and then I will very quickly go through what the Dash 6 amendments do, and if the committee wants me to go over in detail, I can, but I don't think that's your preference. I wanted to take a moment to just personally identify something about the Oregon Travel Experience. As you know, I've been around the building quite a while, and I've seldom seen a state agency that operates like these people do. They are truly an example of those folks who think outside of the box. They take the responsibility to their local partners very seriously. They reach out to those folks even when they don't have to. And that has often caused a little bit of surprise by our local partners, but as a result, we've been able to generate excitement around the rest areas that previously have been thought of as being a public eyesore in many circumstances. We have a lot of work to do in each of these rest areas. The transformation that we started is not complete, and we have brought some rather non-traditional partners around the table. Recently, we brought together the Motor Coach Transportation Companies, school bus drivers, veterans, and disabled folks to tell us what they need in the rest area, not because we need to be in compliance, but because we need to meet their needs, and that's what OTE does with these rest areas. We want to make sure that these rest areas are safe, that they're clean, that they're welcoming, and then beyond that, we want to harness our local relationships in order to make these things economic drivers for local communities so that when people come in and they see, hey, this is what Oregon is all about. By the way, why don't you go in the neighboring community to spend the night, to go to the restaurant, to go to the activities that's there, to visit some of the natural occurrences that are going on around there. Now, I admit that we had hoped to go further in this legislation than we have. As you might guess, Oregon Travel Experience is impatient to do good things. Not everyone in government thinks necessarily along those way. That way, we don't always have a shared vision, and we understand that. And so we will be working patiently with those folks who might think there's a better way to do it or a different way to do it, and try to bring them along in the future. But I wanted at least to tell you about how proud I was to serve an organization like Oregon Travel Experience as the representative. That being said, I'll very quickly tell you what the Dash 6 amendments do. They resolve one of the biggest problems, which was where the money comes from. Additional funds that are dedicated to this purpose do not come off the top. What that means is the bill does not take any portion of city and county money that they get from the highway fund, other than that money that was already given to them that way as a result of House Bill 2001 back in 2009. In addition, it changes the makeup of the commission so that it is more at large to reflect what has been a much expanded purpose from what they were originally given in 1973. It calls for a Secretary of State's audit of the use of our funds so that everyone feels comfortable that we're using them appropriately. It transfers 28 different rest areas and 16 locations over in a three-stage implementation. The first stage is government camp, and then we take on the I-84 rest areas and then the I-5 rest areas. I had a very nice map for you today, but one particular senator identified a mistake on it, so I have to fix it, and then I will get it to you so you'll have a nice colored map of what we're doing. One other thing is there's language that's in the bill that restricts the use of transient occupancy tax funds from the local and state level for use in maintenance, infrastructure development, management, and utilities in the rest areas. Quite frankly, the way that the Oregon statutes read, you can't use that money for that purpose anyway, but we wanted to make sure that was clear. My understanding is you could use that for tourism-related activities in the rest area should you choose to do that, but that's somebody else's decision, not OTE's, because none of that funds, those funds come to us. I think I've hit the primary items, and if not, I'm certainly willing to go back over and answer any questions you may have. But that's our bill.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. Ms. Garrett.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. And let me first begin by saying the business relationship that was created in the Jobs and Transportation Act in 2009 is extremely healthy, and we're seeing success on many different levels. There's no question about it. It was a good investment. As President Courtney indicated, the pie was increased, though, $3 million dedicated to this type of investment. So I've given you the written testimony. I will touch on three quick areas here. But first and foremost, the foundation, the joint venture we have with the Travel Experience, I believe is extremely healthy, and they're doing good things. And I think the model that we have in place right now may be a pathway we can continue to deal with some of the issues that we have. Again, making sure there's clarity in the way we conduct business with regard to those rest areas on the interstate. We have another partner involved here, and that's the Federal Highway Administration. As a matter of fact, the district representative, Mr. Phil Disler, sits in the audience today to answer any questions specific to the federal role. The issues of control, so ownership and control, the rules of the game, the rules of engagement. We continue to work with Mr. Disler and his folks to understand clarity of what exactly does it mean. And I think that plays itself out in terms of the various qualities, the unique qualities that each of these rest areas that potentially could transfer over. We have to have agreements to understand the definitions and, again, how we will continue to move forward on that front. I think there is an opportunity, and, again, if you look at what is transpiring in the Commonwealth of Virginia in terms of an extremely robust investment in rest areas, that's certainly where I think the state of Oregon would like to go here. They promote public-private partnerships. I think that's an avenue that we should continue to pursue. I think Craig spoke to some of the opportunities that are blooming along these areas. I don't want to dismiss that. But I think at the core of my testimony would be the use of the trust fund in terms of the amounts of money going to take care of these rest areas. There's no question if you grow the pie, let her rip. We're doing good things there. But I'd be remiss if I didn't come to you and say, listen, it wasn't but a couple months ago I was before you saying, those state highway trust fund dollars are trending in the wrong direction. Again, we had a forecast from 08 to 15, and as we look at it now, we're down about $500 million here. And there are implications to the overall condition of the system here. So while I embrace the direction we go, I ask the question, just to put it in front of you and your colleagues here to have that policy discussion. With the financial pie shrinking, is now the time to do this? Don't debate the activities and the good work that's being done right now. It's just a fiscal reality that we have to face. And might there be another time and place so we can continue to explore this, maybe it bring in additional partners to turn on revenue streams that may blunt some of the trauma to the Highway Trust Fund. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand down and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, one other thing I'll add is I provided some information for you to review about some experiences we've had in the rest areas with people who are visiting them, and would encourage you to peruse those.
Thank you. I'm going to just momentarily recess on Senate Bill 1591 and open on Senate Bill 1543. Senator Mona Sanderson. He's back too. I want to let you get back to work in your committee. Would you like to comment? I think you want to talk to address the dash 8s of Senate Bill 1543.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Mona Sanderson, representing Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. And Senator Starr had brought forward an amendment, and I'm not sure which amendment number.
Dash 8
amendments for 1543. And it has to do with the redistribution of transportation funds, and evidently Senator Burdick also had an amendment with the Selwood Bridge. And I don't want to pit the Selwood Bridge against our interchange, but I did want to put on record how important this interchange at 257th and I-84 in Troutdale is. It is I consider that amendment a jobs amendment. We so need to have that interchange fixed. We have trucks going through there. We have all these truck stops there. We have FedEx there, and we need to be able to bring more businesses in and move, I call it commerce, move those trucks in and out of that area. And so the additional funding is extremely important. We don't have neighborhood associations up in arms about trucks coming through there. Trucks are going down back and forth on I-84 all of the time. And so I just want the committee to realize how important funds are to go to that interchange. I introduced a bill last session, which we did not pass out, asking for funding for that interchange. And you have to go back to the fact that with Selwood Bridge, Multnomah County did raise its fees, registration fees, driver's license registration fees, and a lot of my constituents were extremely upset about that when Clackamas County decided not to raise their registration fees due to the fact, even though 60% of the people from Clackamas County take the Selwood Bridge to go back and forth over the Willamette River. But that's another issue. I just want you to focus on that any time you can help the port and our truckers with getting this interchange going and being developed, it is really in our best interest. It's really about bringing jobs to my district, Senate District 25. And that's really all I wanted to say. And evidently, Senator Starr has sort of worked out a deal just recently. I thank him very much. But I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you very much.
And indeed, I believe a compromise solution has been worked out to everybody's satisfaction.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you,
Chair.
Senator. And I will recess on that and get back. Is Senator Boquist here?
He is not letting us compete.
There he is. Senator Boquist, if you want to come forward, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1569.
Apologize, Mr. Chair.
And I'm real short on time today, so
we'll be brief. Gravity, I won't take as long as the bathroom crew did.
Thank you.
Did I get a vote for that? I'm Senator Boquist. I'll kind of skip the normal information. You have before you 1569 that Senator Beyer was good enough to give a hearing on. Senator George and I and several others have been working on ways to put people back to work. This is another one of the concepts that we've kind of put forward. I'm going to outline the bill just very briefly for you and then give you a little bit of background information. And Mike, if you'd be kind enough to hand that to staff over there, and I won't go through it because I've sent it to you. What we're trying to do in 1569 is a couple of different work groups is identify ways to get people back to work quicker within the state unemployment system. This particular concept, I'll walk through it very quickly. A lot of people are unable to find jobs in their job categories, and right now what we don't have is a mechanism in place and where they could take an alternative job that might pay less as a training job, but then still collect their full benefits. Good example is that if you took a minimum wage job doing something and your benefits are $14 an hour, you lose the differential in that part. The second part of that same type of theory is that in the last third, when your benefits are expiring, the question comes back is, you're going to go on our social services rolls when you expire. And the question is we've got to get people long-term back to work. You have coming across to you, you see that Graham Slater at the Employment Department has told us many times and helped us get the U6 rates. I email this out to you every time. I get it once a month. The unemployment rate's actually around 17% in Oregon, which is why we're kind of trying to address this. The second component of this bill and looking at kind of trying to go forward in ways to figure out what's going, you'll remember we all got the Oregonian article last year that we lose about $392 million a year in unemployment fraud. Director Warner sent out a deal, said, well, we're doing better. We're collecting 61% of that back. That still leaves $150 million a year that we don't collect. And I'm looking across here, and I know at least five of you, or maybe all of you, are employers and know what our unemployment rate insurance is right now because we have a huge fraud rate. Second portion of this bill is one of those stabs at addressing the issue of getting more collections. And if you get more collections back of fraudulent payments, our unemployment insurance rate goes down and the number of jobs go up in the state. The last portion in this bill is we're always hearing, we hear it in every committee. I just heard it here. I'm thinking of the restrooms you were saying earlier. We passed two public votes to fund parks, and we all thought the parks were paying for restrooms along the freeways, and we still don't have restrooms along the freeway, and we still spend money for the lottery for parks. Likewise, we always say, well, it's federal funds, federal this, federal that. Unemployment's the same way. We always hear, well, the federal government says you can't do it. Well, we're the legislature. We can change state law. The other thing we can do is we can tell the department, fine, call the federal government, send them a letter and ask for a waiver for some of these programs. And when they tell us no, then we have a mechanism in place that we can do something to go forward and change. That's the direction we're kind of trying to go here. I think all of you have seen the Oregon Key Workforce Challenge report that came out, again, put together by Graham Slater. It really outlines, you know, long-term high unemployment, structural changes need to be done to industries. Businesses at the same time can't find jobs or can't find employees. Mike's going to talk very briefly. My district's a rather odd one. We have a high unemployment rate, but we have hundreds of jobs that can't be filled simultaneously in the city of McMinnville. And so we're kind of struggling with how to go forward. And if you'll indulge me just a couple more minutes, Mr. Chair, I'll let Mike Whitehead just speak. He's a constituent from my district. He's been working with the work group, Senator George, and unlike me, he has a real job.
Mr. Chair, my name is Mike Whitehead. My wife and I own Express Employment Professionals in McMinnville. And I think all of you have the survey that I sent out to all the Oregon Express offices. Mm-hmm. This is the second one I've done in less than a year. Results are very close to the same on both surveys. Lots of jobs open at the time of the survey. Lots of jobs filled every month. And you'll notice in the back, the number one reason people turn down a job is it affects their unemployment or they're making more on unemployment. We have to get people back to work, keep them at work, and this is a great way to start out. Thank you.
Questions?
Okay, brief enough, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Well, if you can amend that other bill and put the parks and the toilets back in the same place, we could actually open those rest areas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator. Senator Boquist, thank you very much. I think you're right on target. I think this makes a lot of sense to do, and hopefully your work group is set and we can find a way forward.
And I appreciate your offer earlier to kind of work together on something like this next session.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1569 and reopen on Senate Bill 1591. And let's see, Commissioner Bernard, Mr. Honeyman, and Ms. Hannes. Commissioner, sorry we didn't get you up the other day, and thank you for coming back.
I appreciate it. I enjoyed the discussion the other day. I'm Clackamas County Vice Chair of the Commission, Jim Bernard, and I'm here in support of SB 1591, and I, too, have a passion for bathrooms, except my passion is actually that I think they should be visitor centers. Very little investment has gone into these facilities over the years. Government Camp is a good example of a failing facility. But more importantly, I think that Ball Doc's a good story. We had 126 citations from May to October in 2009. Turns out 100 people lived at the rest stop. School buses picked up the children at the rest stop, take them to school. This went on for years, as many as 10 years. ODOT never addressed this issue. It seems like it would have been an important issue to address. OTE does have a passion for visitor centers. OTE has a vision that will give us an opportunity to make this an economic driver. Clackamas County, Wilsonville, OTE, Canby, and many other partners sat down to create a vision for the Ball Dock Station. After only a few meetings, suddenly we find out that ODOT is going to put solar array and take up 6 acres of that site. Suddenly our plans are stalled. So we do have a passion for this this visitor center, and we have passion for all the visitor centers. They should be safe, convenient, and they should provide an economic opportunity for the communities that surround them. But they have not been maintained. It's going to take some money to get them back up to where they should be. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Hannes?
Sure. For the record, I'm Ann Hannes, and I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And we also want to recognize the efforts of the Oregon Travel Information Council to improve rest areas and make them more safe and hospitable. We also understand that the government camp rest area has been taken care of. What my testimony is focused on is the overall funding for this bill. And in this bill, it is calling for, and once it's all fully phased in, it would double the funding for rest areas, about $3.4 million for the biennium. One of our concerns is looking at this in the array of other priorities that there is for road maintenance and operations, and there's not enough money to accommodate our wants and needs. So, and we do appreciate the efforts by Craig Campbell and the Oregon Travel Information Council to address one of our concerns, which would have been taking the money off the top, because that would have meant that counties would have absorbed about 30% of the request. However, it does affect other programs that ODOT has, as well as programs that benefit counties. So I guess in summary, we would ask that we'd like to work with the Travel Information Council and feel this should go through the regular budget process to fully weigh out the array of different budget requests there are and determine how can we most efficiently fund this. Thank you.
Thank you. Craig, we have your written testimony, so.
Yeah. Senator, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to testify. My name is Craig Honeyman, Legislative Director, League of Oregon Cities, representing all 242 cities in Oregon. I will paraphrase my comments and start off by saying, by acknowledging that the amended version of the bill is a great deal more palatable than the original version, which would have come off the top, as has been indicated, and would have caused the League to have to strongly oppose this legislation. However, we still have some concerns with regard to where the money is going to come from, that is the ODOT maintenance budget. I've attached to my testimony a copy of a report that we have just updated that shows that in the aggregate on an annual basis, cities in their municipal street budgets are upside down $187 million. Now, I understand that's a completely different pot of money, but secondarily, as you know, state roads often in smaller cities are the main thoroughfare in a smaller city, even in a larger city, act as collectors and arterials. So we are concerned, whether it's snow removal or pothole repair, about the impact this bill might have on cities. We were pleased to serve on the Transportation and Tourism Task Force, which back in 2008 presented a report called the Oregon Strategic Rest Area Plan. And I might call to your attention that in that plan, one of its tenets was, or one of its recommendations was, that more emphasis be put on public-private partnerships for this kind of activity. In fact, and I quote, it says, in doing so, it takes a sting out of needing to find new pots of money in tight state revenue streams. This is especially important as funding for rest areas should not continue to drain the existing highway fund, end quote. The other concern we have is the carve-out that Mr. Campbell talked about for the funding coming from the transient lodging tax. We would ask the question that if the funding for this purpose is so important, why is any source of partnership being excluded? We think that this language is both unnecessary, as I think Mr. Campbell may have hinted, and maybe not appropriate public policy. In fact, I think I'd like to make the argument to you that at least in terms of some of the marketing proposals that I think are being considered for new and improved rest areas, that this is exactly the kind of purpose that transient lodging taxes could be put towards. So let me close by saying that we also acknowledge that rest areas are important to the transportation network, opportunities for rest and relief for the driver, and commercial driving public is important. It enhances safety and the driver's experience on Oregon roadways. There's no question about that. We agree further that rest areas need to be kept functionally operational, clean, and safe. But as Mr. Garrett indicated, we wonder whether this is the right time for this kind of an expenditure. I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, panelists. Question? Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm a water lobbyist. You wonder why am I here? I go to great depths to look for water, and I guess that's the reason I'm here, actually. I have chaired the Urban Renewal
Senator
District.
Courtney, have you?
Yeah. I have chaired the Urban Renewal Advisory Committee in Government Camp since 1989 when it was created. The area went from an assessed value from $60 million to $160 million. It's now poised to probably double in the next 5 years, depending on what the economy does. You know how difficult it is to get unanimous agreement on everything, on anything. And I did get unanimous agreement from the community and a vote taken 2 weeks ago that they wanted to go on a record of supporting this piece of legislation. And that concludes my testimony. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. That's all I have signed up. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1591, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1591. Senator Atkinson.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash six amendments.
Senator Atkinson has moved the dash six amendments to Senate Bill 1591. Is there discussion? Senator Stark.
I'll support the motion. My preferred way to handle this would be to allow for the private sector to work in a way with the public sector, but since that's not an option before us, I'll support this option.
Senator, my option would be that too, but I understand federal law precludes us from doing that.
There is that
not
small
very wise,
problem.
But that's the policy. Is there any other discussion? Is there any opposition to the amendment? The amendment is adopted. Senator Atkinson.
I would move the bill as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1591 as amended by the dash six to Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any opposition? Senate Bill 1596 as amended is moved to Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation.
Who knew that going Tinkle could be so exciting?
You betcha. We'll now open on Senate Bill 1533. Patrick, work session on 1533.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1533. We heard this last Thursday. This measure is the one that requires contracting agencies to include an amount in contracts for construction, reconstruction, or major renovation, equivalent to 1.5% for the total contract price for inclusion of appropriate green energy technology. Actually, Mr. Chair, at our last meeting, we adopted the -2 amendment to the bill. The -2 amendment replaced the definition of green energy that was in the original bill with one that includes just geothermal energy and solar energy as is in the current law. That's already in the bill, Mr. Chair. We did not at the time have the paperwork to move the bill. At this point, we have received on the -2 amendment a minimal expenditure impact and no revenue impact. The impact statements of the measure can be moved to the floor, Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Let's see here. This is 1533. Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 1533 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, is there any objections to the motion? There is none. Senate Bill 1533 as amended has moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Whitsitt will carry that. We'll close on 1533, and we will open on Senate Bill 1556. We heard this the other day. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1556, you're correct, we heard this last Thursday. It's a measure that permits contracting agencies to give preference to bidders or proposers that exceed the federal Buy America requirements that apply to federally funded transit projects. The measure has an emergency clause. We had at the time not received the fiscal impact. That has now been received as a minimal fiscal impact. There's no revenue impact, no amendments, Mr. Chair. Bill's ready to go to the floor if it's the committee's desire.
This is permissive legislation, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Senator Atkinson.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1556 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved 1556 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion?
Actually, I have.
Senator Girard?
Yeah, the question I would have, does this put us in violation of the of trade?
Interstate Commerce Clause you're talking about?
Yes.
No.
Why wouldn't it? Because it seems to me like what you're saying is we have to, if you buy local, you can get away from a marginal bid. And so that's my only fear of this bill.
Senator, you want to try and answer that?
No, my sense is that because the bill's permissive, it isn't not a mandate. It doesn't get us crosswise with.
But it allows them to do it, and that's.
I think the issue, if you recall from the hearing the other day, is the federal law already allows you to get to 60%. In fact, I think it requires 60%, but as they explained it, the federal law requires if a state wants to go higher than that, that they have to have a law that allows them and thus either. Permissive to cities and counties and special districts to do it.
Mr. Chair, the measure also doesn't specifically target Oregon companies either.
Oh, that's it. That's the answer. That actually is the answer. It's Buy America. Yeah. So it is interstate.
Okay. All right.
Further discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. The bill is passed. Senate Bill 1556 is passed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Monis Anderson will carry that bill. We'll close on that and we will open the work session on Senate Bill 1585. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 1588, Mr. Chair. Is that correct? 1588, Mr. Chair.
Is it 88?
Yes, 15. It's supposed to be 1588, Mr. Chair.
88.
Thank you. Senate Bill 1588, we heard this the last week as well. This excludes from the definition of employment for purposes of unemployment insurance benefits, services performed in operation of passenger motor vehicles operated as taxi cabs. The measure would take effect on the 91st day following sine die. At the time, we had not received the necessary paperwork. We have since received that. There has been a fiscal impact statement issued, Mr. Chair, as well as a revenue impact statement issued. Both of those, it will have an impact on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. However, it's not an impact that requires referral to another committee, Mr. Chair, so the bill can go to the Committee on Ways and Means.
And we had no amendments on that.
No amendments, Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
So it's Ways and Means?
No, it's to the floor.
To the floor.
Hold on. Why is that?
because it has almost no impact.
I know, but we have other bills that have got virtually no impact that get demanded down to Ways and Means.
I think you have to have at least a $50,000.
Mr. Chair, it all depends on where the impact is occurring. This is occurring in the UI trust fund, and that's...
Not a jail.
Well, in light of that sterling testimony, I would move Senate Bill 1588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 1588 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 1588 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Burdick, would you like to carry that?
I would be delighted.
Senator Burdick will carry. We'll close on that, and we will, okay, now we're down to the meat. We will open the work session on Senate Bill 1543. Patrick, let's do the JTA amendments first, and then we'll do the votes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have before us two amendments that address the Jobs and Transportation Act portion of this measure. The two amendments that we have before us that do that are the Dash 8 amendment. That actually does what the original bill was designed to do, which is change that date of the required report from the original bill from March 1st to November 1st. And then the measure also makes two specific reallocations. I believe Senator Starr was going to speak to those. The Dash 12 amendments do exactly the same thing with the one change between the two. The difference between the two is that the Dash 12 amendments make a specific allocation to redistribute funds from the first seven listed projects evenly between the I-84 and 257th interchange and the Selwood Bridge, respectively, Mr. Chair. And Senator Starr, I believe, can address his amendment.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. I would recommend the Dash 8 amendments to the bill. Just quickly, the process that brought us to the JTA was one of bipartisan negotiations. House, Senate members, Republicans and Democrats, and stakeholders at the table as we negotiated the bill. What we have are two projects that are listed in the bill that we know are coming in under what's in the bill. We've identified the dollar amounts in the bill. The bids came in below that. And so there's dollars available on the table. It makes sense for us to move those dollars to other projects that are listed in the bill where those dollars can get to use relatively quickly and pretty much immediately. The amendment moves the money from the I-5-205 widening basically to the other end of 205 for a project that Senator Mona Sanderson testified on, the highway or the 257 interchange project. My understanding is those dollars can get put to use immediately in that project. The money that is identified in the Highway 26 widening would move basically two interchanges up the freeway to the Chute Road interchange in Hillsboro. And again, those dollars would go immediately into use to facilitate a phase of that particular project. It makes sense to me to move those dollars as quickly as we can within this construction period so that we can get more people back to work and those transportation infrastructure projects can be moved forward in a way that makes sense. So that's the crux of the amendment in the Dash 8s. There's folks here from Hillsboro to talk about the Hillsboro project if the committee still wanted to hear. We have heard from Senator Mona Sanderson on the 257 project. The Port of Portland, I know, is supportive of the 257 interchange. And I know that other stakeholders that were engaged in the overall conversation about when House Bill 2001 was negotiated back in 2009 are supportive of the Dash 8 amendment.
Do you want to address the Selwood thing?
So the Selwood Bridge project has been very active, recognizing that they're short of funds to complete that project that's going into construction, I believe, this summer. I have committed to Multnomah County and advocates of Selwood
to identify and find additional sources of dollars outside of this JTA pot of money. Again, just the conversation around the JTA was, again, very carefully negotiated among the stakeholders and legislators. And if Selwood gets mixed in with that, I think it's problematic for us moving forward. I believe that we can identify some resources for the Selwood Bridge. I've committed to Multnomah County to work with them on that. But it would be outside of this particular pot of money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Based on Senator Starr's commitment to Multnomah County, which I applaud, I will be able to support this amendment. I think the 257 interchange in particular is crucial for our whole region. But I want the record to show that it's not just Selwood Bridge, it's a Highway 43 interchange, which is ODOT property, and so this is not a, you know, this is not county property. This is ODOT property here, and the county has already contributed a significant amount to that interchange, and so I think it's very legitimate that they get some help, and I'm very appreciative, Senator Starr, for taking it on to make sure that help is forthcoming to get that last little bit of the way, because the Selwood Bridge and the interchanges that go with it are also vital to the health of our region.
Thank you, Senator. Paul, did you want to address anything? Have you down to wanting to testify, or do you need to? You don't need to if you don't want to.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, I don't need to testify on the Dash 8. I was going to testify on the basis of the bill, as I did in the interim, talking about the role of the commission now plays with the bill. So if you have any questions on that, I can take that. If not, I can just submit to my testimony.
As we started on the bill, the intent was to sort of put us back in the process where the department and commission would be reporting to us on any surplus funds.
Correct.
Before we went into session and would be making recommendations for the legislature to consider on projects. So it's a good process going forward. We're just sort of getting out in front of it a little bit.
Correct. So if you got any questions about that process, I'm prepared to answer those.
Any questions of ODOT?
Okay.
Sarah, I have you down, but unless you really need to, I think we've had a description of the project. Unless anybody has a detailed description that they need from Hillsboro. Seeing none, Senator Starr?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 1543.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 1543. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the Dash 8s are adopted. Now we're going to...
May I just mention real quick on the record, Mr. Just for clarification, the adoption of the Dash 8s makes the Dash 1s and Dash 2s, which are in your packets, immaterial, Mr. Chair.
Right. They incorporated the others.
Correct.
Correct. Okay, now we're going to move on to the second part of this bill, which is the discussion we had the other day regarding the ports of Coos Bay and Yaquina. And on that, we have a couple of amendments on that. I believe the debt, but well, I'll let you cover them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have three amendments that would address the Yaquina Bay, Coos Bay subject. The Dash 10 amendment is a slight modification of the Dash 5 amendment, which the Dash 4 amendment, Mr. Chair, that we had the other day. It maintains the same language from that amendment, with the exception of it now applies only to the Coos Bay pilotage ground and Yaquina Bay pilotage ground, Mr. Chair. It also allows owning stock in a corporation registered on a national security exchange that owns tugboats in operation either pilotage ground. That would not apply to the prohibition in the measure. That's the Dash 10 amendment. The Dash 14 amendment directs, is a completely different concept on the same subject. It directs the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots to study the effects of licensees owning interests in tugboats that are used for boarding and leaving vessels that are piloted by licensees of the Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay pilotage ground. It allows the board to utilize independent experts. It directs the Public Utility Commission to provide staff support for the study and directs that the board to report back to the Legislative Assembly. Those provisions would be repealed January 2nd, 2014. That's the dash 14 amendment. Then the dash 15 amendment, Mr. Chair, prohibits licensees and trainees from piloting a vessel on the Coos Bay Bar Pilotage Ground or Yakina Bay Bar Pilotage Ground if the individual or an immediate family member has any financial interest in a boat, equipment, or equipment assisting the vessel in entering or exiting the bay. That amendment also allows owning stock in a corporation registered on National Securities Exchange or on tugboats. And it also directs the State Marine Board to adopt rules allowing prohibited individuals to pilot vessels in emergency situations and would also require that rulemaking to fix rates for doing so. And set the operative date for this amendment's provisions is January 1st, 2013. We have received the paperwork back on all of these amendments. There's no revenue impact on any, and they have either minimal or no fiscal impact for any of these amendments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Patrick. So, members, I think we have four options. We heard the discussion and concerns the other day. One option is just to not adopt any of these and let things to continue there. And under that, there's two potential remedies for people who feel aggrieved there. One is there was years ago, there was an adjudication process, or actually, I guess it was more correctly, it was an arbitration that set out a process. They could go back to the arbitrator. Secondly, they could file a complaint with the Board of Maritime Pilots and let the pilots or the board adjudicate that. That's one option. Another option would be just to prohibit, as the Dash 10s do, anybody doing piloting services from also having any involvement in owning or operating a business that provides ship assist or tugging services. The 14s are an attempt to refer the matter, in essence, almost a complaint form, to the Board of Maritime Pilots and let them resolve the issue between now and next January. And the 15s were an attempt that I tried that recognized the issues that were down there and essentially said that except in emergency situations, an emergency would be defined by the Board of Maritime Pilots, that a person piloting a vessel may not also use his or her equipment to do that, to provide that service to try and break up the monopoly issue. And if they did, then those services, just that, where there's an emergency, would fall under the rate-making process of the Maritime Pilots, which they already do. So that's sort of the choices. We heard a lot the other day. We do have a couple of other people here today that I would offer the opportunity to comment on these. Captain Ann McIntyre, you weren't here the other day, and I guess Captain Woods, you're the only other licensed pilot on the Coos and Yakuna Bay, so we'll let you give us your thoughts. I will note for the record that I have talked with the ports, both of the management of both of the ports, and they are supportive of the Dash 15s. And they did mention that they are starting a process down there collectively to try and pull a work group together to resolve and homogenize the issue, if you will. So, Captain McIntyre?
Mr. Chair, would you mind if I started just briefly? And if you do, I will retreat to my seat in the audience. I had planned with Captain McIntyre to come up here, and I presume this means quick. I did want to take credit for, Mr. Chair, for the record, Dave Fiskum here for the Coos Bay Yakuna Bay Pilot Association, for Coos Bay Towboat Company, and for the Columbia River Pilots. I did want to take credit for what it's worth, asking you, and I appreciate your indulgence, to get drafted the Dash 14 amendments, which assigned the resolution of this issue, not the resolution, but the review of this issue to the board with an express requirement to come back to you as a legislature with a report by January of 2013. The language in the amendment, which I commend to your attention, is specific with regard to the impact on pilot rates, ship assist rates, the safety of licensees, the impact on ships, property, and the environment. I will stop there with my comments on the Dash 14 amendments, which we advocate for your consideration. And before I'm done here, if you'll allow me, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a comment on Dash 15s, but it may be advisable for me to allow Captain McIntyre and Captain Woods to speak. Captain Woods will be able to answer your questions. I'm not sure he has a prepared statement for you today, so okay. I'll turn to Captain McIntyre. Thank you.
Captain McIntyre. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Ann McIntyre. I am currently the Vice President of the Columbia River Pilots Association, and I have also served as a member of the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots for 5 years. I'm here speaking to you today as the Vice President of the Columbia River Pilots. You already have my letter on file, so I'll make my comments brief. We just became aware of this bill and its proposed amendments about 2 weeks ago. We have not had the opportunity to review how the bill or the amendments will impact our business. There are many complex issues which affect all three pilotage grounds in Oregon. We have not had the opportunity to review these issues. And what I can say at this point is that if any change in the current pilotage or tugboat operations in Coos Bay has the potential to significantly impact our operations on the Columbia River.
How so?
Right now, we currently provide a backup pilot to Coos Bay. Some years ago, and Captain Woods could speak in more detail to this issue, but there wasn't enough ship traffic to support two pilots in Coos Bay. So the Board of Maritime Pilots made administrative rule which allowed a pilot to be cross-licensed for the Columbia River and Willamette Rivers and for Coos Bay. And so in backup times, we provide that second pilot. So that would affect our staffing. But probably even more importantly, if the current situation were to change and Captain Yates were to choose not to pilot in Coos Bay would be left without a full-time, unlimited licensed pilot. This would cause us to lose the staffing, but even more so, the Board of Maritime Pilots would have to address that issue. And how that issue in the past has always been examined would be through cross-licensing or perhaps even the Columbia River Pilots absorbing pilot operations in Coos Bay. There's also issues related to just within the various amendments, what a vessel assist might be. Would that be a pilot boat guiding ahead of another ship in fog? There's just a lot of issues that haven't had the opportunity to be fully vetted, and it's the Columbia River Pilots' opinion that those issues should be vetted at the Board of Maritime Pilots before being considered by the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make just a brief
comment, Captain McIntyre, that I believe the amendment, the Dash 15s, would not be effective until July of 2013, pretty much same as the 14th, to allow some time for that.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say for the record that I just asked your staff to pass out a packet of materials, many of which you already have, but one you didn't have is Captain McIntyre's letter, and it is in the packet about two or three pieces down, so thank you.
Senator Edwards?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure it's been said already in previous hearings, but it's slipping my memory right now. How are the pilot rates set? Is that a set rate by the board?
The pilot rates are set by the Board of Maritime
Pilots. That's what I thought. Okay, thank you.
15s would be January. Senator Gerard, excuse me.
I would like to follow up on that question.
Go ahead.
My understanding is the board is made up of the pilots. So if the pilots are setting the rates, It seems to be
The board is a nine. It's a nine.
Self-serving. Where is the downward pressure on the rates?
The board's a nine-member board. There are three public members, there are three industry members, and there are three pilot members. If there is unable to reach agreement between the various parties, there's a rate hearing that's held in front of an administrative law judge that's provided by the PUC, and the administrative law judge makes a recommendation to the board.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Grodd, I would just add quickly, your chair knows this because he happened to be at the PUC when the Board of Maritime Pilots, in terms of where it is housed, was transferred to the PUC from ODOT expressly to gain access to PUC hearings officers and their expertise if that's necessary.
Captain Woods?
Well, I have no prepared statement. I am in support of the Dash 14. Just the changes that I've seen since the last time I was here, where they've dropped the Columbia River Bar and Columbia River, which I thank you, because they had no business being there. It really, truly comes down to this is a put Charlie Yates out of business bill. And it's brought forth by, not because of any emergency, it's brought forth by old grudges and family, inter-family issues, which I don't want to go into there. But anyway, it has no business really here being before the committee, in my mind. It has, and but if there are issues, they can be dealt with by the State Board of Maritime Pilots and the PUC, where everything, all the facts, all the statements, without any backing, can get vetted. They can be given a proper venue to be seen and heard and proven. And I just, that's my feeling. The as far as the emergency pilot, if we're talking about the Dash 15, if you don't have a license, state license, you cannot be aboard that ship in an advisory capacity.
I think you're misunderstanding it, Mr. Captain. The emergency provisions did not apply to the pilotage. It just said that. In essence, the intent was if there's no other services available there, and I'll just use the illustrations for elementary. If Captain Yates is piloting a vessel and there isn't any other tugs available there under the provisions of an emergency, which I assume the Board of Maritime Pilots, my assumption is, will define, we've given the authority, he then could, or the ship could utilize his equipment at a rate they set. So it would, in that very limited case, the maritime pilots would have the right, have the authority to set a rate for ship assist.
Okay.
That's the thing. It's not putting him out, but I recognize that you or he, since you're the only pilots down there, may choose to get out of that business, and that presents the Board of Maritime Pilots with a different situation.
Mr. Chair, may I just add one other comment? I feel I need to do this in the spirit of full disclosure. I want to thank you for sending me a copy of your amendments several hours ago, the Dash 15 amendments, when I refer to yours, Mr. Chair, the ones you had drafted. We've looked at those. Frankly, we have some questions about the words from a number of vantage points. With your indulgence, I just want to read what my counsel wrote to me at 1:40 this afternoon. The, quote, assisting the vessel, and I will, which is in lines 8 and 9, has no ordinary meaning in the maritime industry. It could mean pilot boats, which take pilots to board the ships. It could mean pilot boats that are used to lead ships into the bay in dense fog, parentheses, very important to the pilots to get in safely, in parentheses, or it could mean boats that are used to push ships at the docks to get them maneuvered into position at those docks or help them get away from the docks. We also have some questions that we're still vetting about what the about how the phrase financial interest works in your amendments. I understand these are just out, so I don't mean to try to, one of the reasons I thought I ought to say that for the record is that I don't feel it's sometimes my job to perfect an amendment I oppose, but Mr. Chair, you deserve that honest clarification from us about questions we have with regard to that language, which we're still looking at. So thank you for your indulgence.
I appreciate that, Mr. Fiscom. And since I authored them and trying to work with LC, neither of which knew the terms of art in the industry, we were hoping that ship assist had a common meaning. But since if it doesn't, then my intent with this is very common in this building would be where there's vagueness, it leaves it up to the administering or regulatory agency to define the term. I will say that it was not the intent to cover the movement of the pilot to or from the vessel. It was only the tug work, either, I guess you'd call it, towing in or following in and shipping docking. That's all that we were trying to address here.
Mr. Chair,
that was the nature of the complaint.
I appreciate your comments to me in your office on Monday to that effect. I understood the distinction you were trying to achieve between transit to a ship over the bar to then have the pilot bring that ship in, as well as what I would call and what I understood you called ship assist in the harbor. I guess I would just tell you I'm not sure the language achieves the objective that I heard you enunciate to me, and okay. You deserve to know that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Edwards.
Just for the record, I don't think the Dash 10s have that language assisting the vessel.
just, no. The Dash 10s, Senator, just all they do is take the Columbia and the Willamette out and completely eliminate the ability of someone involved in piloting from owning, not just using, from being involved in the business of owning tugs or anything else. So it would have to be a choice of, for example, Captain Yates or Captain Woods, if they'd have to decide that they were going to be a pilot or they're going to be something else. I think the risk to the port, I may be wrong here, but Captain Woods could probably clarify to me, with the limited amount of ships coming over the bar now, unless that increases, that the tugging business and related stuff is probably more revenue positive to Captain Yates and this, and he'd probably be stuck with the wanting to give up his license if he had to make a choice. I don't know that, but that would be my guess.
Since 1927, Coos Bay has always been a boom and bust economy, and the pilots in 1927 had bought an old tug and utilized it as pilot vessel transfer. The Port of Coos Bay had their own tug, and they finally got out of the business because there wasn't enough money for the amount of revenue. So the pilot has pilot transportation, and he had something to help if they chose to use it. As things got better through the, I'm sure I'm boring him, but as things got progressively better during the war and then got worse and back, Coos Bay Towboat was always there in the good times and bad. And at this point, yes, Charlie is the one that's doing most of the work. It doesn't preclude, there is no monopoly. Anyone can come in. 50% of 2 months of no shipping is 50% of two ships with nothing.
Well, I understand the captain is that there's nobody else there providing.
There is now. There is now.
Besides Coos?
Coos Bay Towboat, there's Knutson Towboat. He's there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Any other questions?
Thank you very much. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
Should just be a public hearing and possible work session. So if we overstepped our bounds.
Yeah, I'm just watching my clock. I got another issue to get to. And Ms. Salt, no one signed up. Do you wish very quickly to make comments about any of these since you brought the original amendment? And then I'd like the Maritime Board, if you choose to comment on any of this.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, Kaylin Soss with Ball Janik here today on behalf of Soss Brothers. There are a few issues brought up. First of all, the Dash 15s allow the Board of Maritime Pilots to train a pilot in a year. So to train a pilot within a year. That gives them plenty of time to have a new pilot down there if Charlie Yates decides to revoke his license. The second part was Knutson is down there, but he's excluded in contracts. It's a monopoly. This is not competitive. It's not fair trade. This amendment does nothing more than create a task force to study an issue where we already know we're clear on this issue. There's a monopoly. There's not fair and competitive trade. Finally, the part on the family issue, which I do not know where that arose from. I understand Coos Bay is a small town. I've been there for five generations. I'm in no way related to Charlie, and I'm not sure where that got brought up. So I appreciate your time on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Would the board like to address these at all?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kim Duncan again for the Board of speaking as the Chair of the Board of Maritime Pilots. You have a letter from me that came in this morning, probably in your packet from your committee administrator. I'm not going to go through that. But the issues that were raised last week when this bill was first heard continue to be a concern to me as the chair. And that's because the amendments, while they've narrowed, and we have taken care of the Columbia River and the Columbia River Bar issues, we still have issues down in Coos Bay, some of which the pilots who were just up discussed with you. I would want you to understand that while you don't have any fiscal impacts on these bills at this point. We were just asked for this about 3 hours ago, by the way. There are going to be real costs. There's going to be potential costs to the disruption of shipping in Coos Bay, costs of a rate hearing in order to fully cover the costs of providing pilot transportation services in Coos Bay, and, of course, costs for the unanticipated and probably unintended legal consequences that are going to come up. These will cost the state of Oregon through the Board of Maritime Pilots money. We just need to understand that. There are also, however, some concerns that have arisen in discussions today with our council about some of the proposed language, and I wanted David Hatton, who is our assistant AG, to talk with you a little bit about some of those concerns that he's had.
Well, actually, I think the previous panel addressed concerns I had regarding ship assists and assistance to ships. I think by statute, bar pilots are required to furnish equipment to both board and disembark from ships, and that generally means a pilot boat. And I think it would be important that pilots continue to have that ability consistent with that statute. I think you've addressed that concern. I also did want to mention there one potential impact of this legislation is currently there is not a sufficient shipping in on the Coos Bay Bar to pay for the pilot boat, and in rate making, the board, through its rate orders, has looked both at the pilot revenue, piloting revenue, and also has looked at the ship assist revenue, excuse me, and has, and that the ship assist, which would be precluded under at least dash 15, pays for approximately 50% of the pilot boat at this point, and should this pass, there will be a significant shortfall in rates, and which would have to be adjusted through some kind of rate increase, unless some unidentified source would allow it to, those kinds of savings. So there will be significant impact on the current rates.
Questions?
Senator Burdick?
Just so I can be clear, does the board favor the 14 amendments, the dash 14 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, the board has not taken a position because the board has not met since all of this started. I would tell you that I think you would have an opportunity to get a lot of very good information if you did something like the Dash 14 amendments suggest, and you would have a chance to assess whether the business model that's working in Coos Bay now is the long-term business model you want for pilotage. It's hard to get to that in such a compressed period of time with the amendments that you've got before you. So I do think it would be a more deliberate way to address this issue and bring it back to you in 2013. But that's my personal opinion, not that of the board's.
Can anybody else?
Mr. Chairman, may I add one other thing? There was a mention made also by one of the previous testifiers about the amount of time it takes to train a pilot. Training pilots takes a very long time. I think in Coos Bay it's at least 3 years. It's very dependent on the number of ships a trainee can ride, because you do this by repetition. If you don't have a lot of ships coming in, the training takes longer because you simply don't get the experience. On the Columbia River Bar, it takes 100 transits before somebody can qualify, and that's after a good 20 years as a mariner.
Well, currently we have two pilots licensed for the Coos.
Yes.
And Aquinas, Captain Woods and Captain Yates. Is there a trainee currently down there as well?
Yes, there is a trainee.
So would we be left in the situation if one of these amendments passed and Captain Yates decided he didn't want to stay in the pilotage business anymore, where would, from the board's perspective, where would we be? I guess we'd be with Captain Woods. No? Captain McIntyre shaking.
You would be with Captain Woods if you could make it work with the Columbia River pilots who already have the priority claim on this time. The board would have to look also at the readiness of the trainee. Would you adopt some emergency interim training rules that lifted the standards that we operate under? This would be a big concern to the board because we have a remarkable safety record and we wouldn't want to do anything that would jeopardize that.
Can you address that at all?
Yes, Chairman Beyer and Senators. Right now we have George Wales is our trainee pilot. He is currently licensed on Coos Bay. He can drive ships through the railroad bridge up to 23,000 gross ton. Any vessel with a ship with the house forward amidships up to 300 feet. In the lower bay, he can pilot ships up to 40,000 gross ton. Most of the ships are the log ships. It's 50-50 on whether or not he can do those as far as the tonnage. And the lower bay, most of those ships go to Roseburg Lumber, and it's about 60-40 there on the tonnage. But the ships are getting bigger and bigger. In a year and a half's time, he will be able to be a fully unlimited pilot. So there's a year and a half's time there that anything over what he can do, well, then I would have to be dispatched down.
Okay. And would you do that?
Yeah. That's my job.
Okay. So we would not be left if Captain Yates chose not to pilot, to turn his license in, we would still have you.
I would be dispatched down to do the job.
Okay.
It would be problematic. We do work a schedule, and there's right. times where I might want to be gone, but what happens when a ship shows up? I might be in Mexico.
Could be a long wait off the shore.
You know, or in emergency situations.
I'm sorry, you can come in next week.
Thank you.
But you would have to, one of the two of you that are licensed now, would have to complete the trainee's training?
Yes.
Well, so that'd be about a year and a half, you
say? After 2 years' time as being on the reduced license, if he hasn't run anything on the rocks or done anything, to hinder it, well, then it will be, he will be unlimited pilot.
My concern, as we've addressed this, just trying to respond to that, is to make sure that the legislature doesn't do some action that leaves it impossible to bring a ship into Coos Bay.
Mm-hmm. Well,
That's the issue. Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I definitely appreciate the exploration of all the aspects of this issue. Everything that we do here in the legislature has consequences. We hope that they are unintended consequences. And I think discussing things like whether or not a specific pilot will remain in the piloting business is relevant to the topic, but kind of misses the point. And the point of the amendments before us is whether or not, as a legislature, whether or not it's going to be public policy in Oregon to continue to allow what some of us perceive to be a monopoly situation in the ship assist services to continue. Now, and I know there's been some have contended that there's not a monopoly. Some have contended that there is a monopoly. And, in listening to all the testimony, at least from my vantage point, I'm more persuaded by the argument that there is not really much of a free market working for ship assist services. So in dealing with that, does that financially impact the current sole pilot in Coos Bay? Probably. I mean, that's kind of the point of what we're getting at. So it seems to me, though, that that's something that could still be taken up by the board setting the rates of the pilots. And then, as far as the impact on the overall cost between the ship assist services and the pilot of bringing the ship into the bay, if that got exorbitant,
and it was just too much, mm-hmm. then you know, be back to the drawing board. But we'd need to take that up in future sessions if the board's not able to, or if the board needs authorization to do something, you know, in a regulatory framework there. But I think that all the discussion about whether or not a specific pilot will make the choice as to whether or not to stay in the piloting business should not be the primary factor in our decision about whether or not to allow what some of us perceive as a monopoly situation to exist on ship assist services.
Senator, I think the primary issue is to make sure that you can continue to bring a ship into Coos Bay.
Absolutely. That's
first and foremost in the short term.
That's job number one. Job number two would be
that there is a market that's working
at a reasonable cost.
I personally am a little surprised. I know that the board works on a complaint basis, but I have to admit that I'm a little perplexed that you've had a situation that, from what we've heard, has been going on for literally decades, and the board has never intervened at all.
Mr. Chairman, in the 5 years that I've been on the board, the issue hasn't never been raised formally or informally. Our committee administrator reports that in the 20 years she served, it has not been raised formally or informally. So I don't, from my perspective, it hasn't gotten to us. What we have been concerned about regularly is the fact that Coos Bay doesn't have enough business to fully pay for the pilot services, and that has been where we have been involved.
I will tell you that in talking with the port administrators of both Yaquina and Coos Bay, that's not their recollection. And there is a little concern, lack of faith in the board being able to do its regulatory job. It's just there, whether it's fair, accurate, I don't know, but I will tell you it's there.
Yes.
Captain?
I just wanted to follow up very, very quickly that I didn't want to leave the committee with the impression that Captain Woods was always available as a primary pilot in Coos Bay. His primary obligation is to pilot ships in Coos Bay on the Columbia River and serve as a backup pilot for Coos Bay. And so if he were to have all his piloting activity transferred down to Coos Bay, that would have an impact on the Columbia River pilots and our staff.
How many pilots are there?
We have 39 pilots.
39?
Yeah.
Thank you. All righty. I think all right. We have four options in front of us, committee. Do nothing. Do the dash tens, as I said, which essentially just confined the problem to Coos and Yaquina. The dash 14s, which is toss it to the board and let them come back with a recommendation for 2013, or the 15s, which I've described that one, which would provide, would prohibit the two pilots from using their own vessels except in an emergency as defined by the board.
Mr. Chairman, I'm convinced after the hearings that we had that there is a problem in Coos Bay. It strikes me as a pretty serious problem, that even if we don't have an official monopoly, we have an effective monopoly just by the way business is done down there. So I'm frustrated. It would be wonderful to try to find the right solution to solve that problem without interfering with boat or ship trade in Coos Bay. I don't think we're there yet. I would feel most comfortable giving the board a chance to use their expertise and giving them a mandate, you know, through the Dash 14 amendment or something like that. However, if that doesn't prevail on the committee, I think your amendment, the Dash 15, is the best way to go, partly because there is a kind of a safety valve to not have it take effect if we learn more information before its effective date. So I would feel more comfortable with the Dash 14, but we'll support the 15 if that's not the will of the committee.
Senator Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd support either the 10s or the 15s. The 15, my only concern that I'd like on the record with the 15s is that I believe that the board can define emergency, and I think that they can do so appropriately. If emergency, in effect, ends up becoming whenever equipment as defined by the pilot is unavailable, it's an emergency, and so we never get out of the cycle of having equipment available, or, you know, equipment's always unavailable because the other folks can't invest in the right equipment if it doesn't exist now, then we haven't really gotten anywhere. So that would be my one concern with the dash 15s is the definition of emergency, which I think the board can develop, and I am willing to give them a chance to do so in good faith.
Senator Atkinson?
I have several comments to make on this issue, and I'm pained because I'm frustrated by this. And I'm usually frustrated when all the answers you get back is more process. And apparently we've had a problem here for a long time that everyone's going to process to death, but yet no one's going to lead on. Let's get down to the brass tacks. The brass tacks are, it's the policy of the state of Oregon to expand the Port of Coos Bay and make it into something that is a bit of an economic hub, given what it is by way of its natural ability to be a large ship port. We've spent countless times, countless processes, task force commissions, on Connect Oregon and trying to get timber industry and trying to do essentially what Senator Verger has led us all into by way of promoting Coos Bay. That's our policy, number one. As far as the personalities involved, that's not our policy. But let me just say, after the last session or committee meeting we had, I left very frustrated because it seemed to me that the Board of Maritime Pilots had absolutely zero interest in actually addressing the problem. It looked like it was going to be status quo and death by a thousand cuts. Now, my colleague from Springfield has talked me into something else in the development of the Dash 15s and calling around groups that you've provided for me to talk to that know, in fact, the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots is probably a best place to get this started. My reservations were on hold. They were on hold to such a degree that 2 days ago, Captain Woods, I carried on the floor as a member of another committee the reappointment of Kim Duncan and Tom Mark Gaff to the board. I carried your appointments. I don't recall you calling, but that's my job. So I put faith back in you yesterday, and all that faith has been systematically taken away in the last 30 minutes as I've now been back reappointed that you think, Mr. Captain Woods, that I'm bored and that I'm tuning out to the process that you're giving me that is really not an answer at all, which is not true. So the Dash 15s and the Dash 14s. The Dash 14s are a task force, and it'll be a snow day in hell before I actually support another task force to do anything. The Dash 15s is this committee laying out the policy of what shall happen and asking the Board of Maritime Pilots to adopt rules to make sure that this is fixed. I will tell you that the notes are going back and forth between my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat, have really got very little faith that the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots is serious about fixing the issue. Now, given that, and given the date that we have today, that probably is the only amendment that we're going to be able to go with. But I will tell you that when we come back here in about 11 months, we'll have a high degree of skepticism.
Others?
Let's move the bill.
Move the Dash 15 amendments to Senate Bill 1543.
Senator Atkinson has moved the Dash 15 amendments to Senate Bill 1543. Discussion on the motion. Okay. Is there opposition to the motion? The amendment is adopted. We are now to the main bill as amended. Senator Atkinson.
Move Senate Bill 1543 as amended with the Dash 8s and the Dash 15s to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Yeah, it's to the floor. Is it Ways and Means or floor? Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, the measure does not have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I think you want to put it to the floor. We don't need to send it to Ways and Means. That
can
way,
we go on recess for a second?
Sure, that way if there's some amendments language necessary, the House can do it.
Can we go into recess for a second?
We're going to recess momentarily. We have a motion on the floor to move Senate Bill 1543 as amended to Ways and Means. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, 1543 is moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. We are closed on 1543 and we are now open. We will open a work session on 1501.
Oh,
Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1501. We heard this last Thursday as well. This is a measure that creates a central warehouse license to authorize licensees to store wine in a central warehouse for transport to premises in which the licensee holds a qualifying interest. Like I said, we heard this last week and lacked paperwork at the time. Since that time, we have received the Dash 1 amendment, Mr. Chair. The Dash 1 amendment makes a few changes. It clarifies that central warehouse licensees may receive wine from wholesalers or wineries only if the wine wholesaler or winery has paid taxes on the wine, deletes the requirement that the cooperative be comprised of at least 10 members, directs the commission to adopt rules to ensure the wine kept at a central warehouse be readily associated, quote unquote, with a member that holds the title of the wine, specifies that when the holder of the self-distribution permit delivers wine to a central warehouse or a premises sales licensee, the licensee is responsible for paying taxes. While the deliverer must report the deliveries, it establishes a $1,000 bond requirement for central warehouse licensees and clarifies that an off-premise sales licensee that operates a central warehouse need possess only one bond for both licenses. The measure with the Dash 1 has received a fiscal impact statement, which we have in hand, and a revenue impact statement, which we also have in hand, Mr. Chair. The measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Change the tax into the central
warehouse. And I think we also have additional amendments that
1340.
The
chair
will
speak
I
to
go up to the
floor.
So. Huh?
I'm way behind.
Way behind. I'm sort of lost. Does anybody have? We're in a work session,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson, yeah.
Okay.
It's getting late, and after that last one, I'm getting confused.
We could have a task force to study it. Okay, so there's two differences here. One is a language that would have the policy begin in January of 13. The other one would be, which is the dash.
No, that would be 14.
The dash 14s. And the dash 13s have it begin in?
Threes and fours, Mr. Chair.
Reason for us?
Are we on 1501 now, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, because
I'm sorry.
I
dash threes. We just added another 10.
I was really worried about just a couple there.
Don't confuse me like that.
Reason for this. I apologize, Senator.
I don't know. And then one's got one's got tugboats, and then one's got like the Selwood Bridge.
Yeah,
one's got driving Selwood bridges with alcohol under the thing. Okay, sorry.
Go ahead.
So one of them's got, we've got implementation language on January, one's got implementation 6 months later in July. That's the policy discussion. And you are interested in the ones that's later, correct?
The threes. And my sense, and Mr. Farrell, you might be able to address this. you need some, my assumption is you need some time with these changes to adopt some rules.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Steve Farrow, Director of the Liquor Commission. Yes, should the statute be adopted, we would certainly appreciate as much time as possible to go ahead and work through the rulemaking.
So the, if we went with the January, that gives you 7 months? No more than that, 8 months.
Mr. Chair, that would. It would, that would be pretty close. It usually takes 6 to 9 months to get through most of the rules.
Who's that?
More time.
Who's that?
So what's the, well, I guess, any questions, Mr. Farrell, on this? I think we, the motion is pretty clear.
Is there a motion on the table?
Well, no, there are two amendments out there. The question is it...
And dash what's or what?
So I have the threes, the ones, threes, and fours.
Mr. Chair?
The ones are incorporated in the threes and fours.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Could we hear from Whole Foods? Because I think they have a preference as...
Okay, Mr. DiLorenzo, Flynn.
Yeah. No, I can go around.
He's grocery out. I don't want to hear from Whole Foods.
You're off the hot seat for the moment.
This is great.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, I'm John DiLorenzo, Davis Ranch, Maine, on behalf of Grocery Outlet. The dash threes and the dash fours substantively are very similar. They're with one exception, and that is the effective date. The dash...
The only difference, I think, is the implementation date.
The implementation date, right. And the implementation date of the dash threes are July 2013.
Correct.
The implementation date with the dash threes would be immediately because there is an emergency clause in the underlying bill.
Ah, that's
so
immediately. You just said the same thing. Mr. Chair, would you repeat that again? Because you said two things about the dash threes.
Right. We have two sets of amendments that are in play.
Right.
There are the dash threes and the dash fours. They're substantively, they're all the same except for the implementation date. The dash fours do not change the implementation date in the underlying bill. The underlying bill has an emergency clause in it. So the dash fours have an emergency clause, which means they would be effective immediately. The dash threes have a delayed implementation date of July 2013. On behalf of Grocery Outlet, we understand the necessity for commission to implement rules. Of course, they could always implement rules immediately because they can implement temporary rules, which are then followed up through normal rulemaking. My other observation is that July is way too long for an implementation date, because if you recall, one of the underlying reasons for our requesting legislation was because we wanted to build 20 new stores and we want to launch on a building project. In order to do that, we need to attract capital. To attract capital, we need predictability. And July 2013, after the next legislative session, I am afraid will not provide the same amount of assurance to our financiers as January would. Now, I think January would probably work, 2013. The problem is you don't have an amendment that says that. You have one or the other. My request is that you send the dash fours, which are otherwise identical to the dash threes, to Ways and Means, and that in Ways and Means we resolve what the effective date is going to be. But to wait until July of 2013 is, in my view, a long process. It also creates the potential specter of the court having made a decision and then there being a 6-month gap or a 4-month gap between the court's decision and implementation, leaving the OLCC with a question as to which law they would enforce at which time. So I suggest that we go with the
dash fours.
So, Mr. Chair, the dash fours have the January implementation date.
No, the dash fours would be immediate because they
But what is the date they try to put in there? July?
July is in the threes,
I think July
is way too
And January is in the fours, but
no.
it was Trump.
January is, the two choices are, with the emergency clause is immediate or July. The other possibility would be to send it down with the emergency clause to Ways and Means and recommend that they take it out down there, which I don't. It's not that I have anything against Ways and Means. I just don't think they're supposed to be in that business.
Right.
But
right. And if they took it out, then it would automatically be January.
Conceptually amended.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, if they remove it, it would be January.
Conceptually amended.
Yeah, what we do is delete Section 9 of the bill.
That's a violation of our rules. But
well, we're going to have to spend the rules to move the measure.
Anyway,
well, we should get legislative council in the room if we're going to conceptually amend it. I would just have the drafter come down, but that's okay.
I mean, it's just deleted section.
Before we do that,
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, thank you very much. Obviously, in addition to whatever rules are made, any company operating would need to have moments to look at the rules that are promulgated and then put together, move forward with the business plan. So that's one of the reasons why we suggested July 2013, because it both allows time for rulemaking and for a business to act on those rules so that we all know what the lay of the land is.
Right.
And so our preference would be that you adopt the dash threes and if you're going to adopt anything, which we would encourage you to do. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would be willing to suggest as a compromise that we follow Senator Starr's suggestion, which I understand would be you adopting the dash fours and then conceptually amending the bill to remove the emergency clause, which is in Section 9 of the bill. That then would have the effect of having the operative date being January 1, which I think would be okay from Grocery Outlet's perspective. I would hope it would give the OLCC time to promulgate rules, and it wouldn't create the gap that we're afraid of.
Sir.
Yeah, Erez Klein, regional wine buyer for Whole Foods Market. My only concern here is that once the rules are developed by OLCC, there's still a six-month process for us to get licensed. So this leaves a gap where the small players in the market are still waiting 6 months, paying for a warehouse, not able to operate, and our competition is then lowering prices, gaining market share, and taking business away from smaller players in the market just because of the length of time. So the July 2013 date does cover that entire period of time where there's rulemaking, application period, business initiation, everyone enters the market fair and flat.
I could legislate a solution to this challenge, but maybe not in 5 minutes. I mean, there's a way to do this that where you would grandfather in someone that has an existing warehouse and then create a implementation date that allows the new entrants into the market to come in at another point in time.
Well, I think you have that anyway, Senator. I mean, what they're
we don't have a
complaint
warehouse.
Is that by letting one player go first, it gives them, I think what you're saying, is an unfair advantage.
He's talking about
to get a jump start. That's the point that he's making.
Yeah, well.
Patrick, well, any questions of the committee? This is going to take a suspension of the rules to move it because we don't have fiscals on it, and we need to move it to Ways and Means. Yeah. And I suspect if we're suspending the rules, although it's not the way we usually do things around here lately, but short session, that we could probably remove the emergency clause.
Seems relatively simple to me.
But we're going to be in recess momentarily while we're waiting for
is to move a bill without fiscal and revenue statements.
Okay, we're back in session, and Senator Atkinson.
I move the fresh off the press dash 5 amendment.
Senator Atkinson has moved the dash 5 amendments, which remove the emergency clause. Discussion on the amendment. Opposition to the amendment. Dash 5s are adopted. We need to suspend the rules.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we suspend the rules for order of conducting business at this late hour.
Senator Atkinson has moved to suspend the rules to allow movement of the bill to Ways and Means without a fiscal in place. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? There is none. It is adopted. We have suspended the rules. Senator Atkinson.
I would move the bill as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill
1501
as amended by the dash 5s to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there opposition to the motion? It's done. The bill is moved to Ways and Means.
Yay.
Any further business beyond the committee?
Hold on, Mr. Chair. Hold on, Mr. Chair. Let's just make sure we're okay. 1543 removed. 1556, 1501, 1533.
Well, maybe I'll see you down.
1588.
Like the fact that I told Peter I loved him.
1591, Mr. Chair. Okay, we're done.
We're done? We're adjourned.